Hey everybody, welcome back. It's the Star Wars Report podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, this is episode 105, and this is our wrap-up of our Dragon Con coverage from 2013. Man, was it a good time. And well, it's only been 2 weeks, but it feels like a lifetime. But hey, I'm your host for this particular episode, Riley Blanton. Thank you so much for tuning in. On this episode, you will hear our interview with Daniel Logan. He's a rugby player, actually. I was surprised to learn. So we talked to him a little bit about that, and of course his role in Clone Wars, and back in Attack of the Clones as Boba Fett.
Boba Fett!
And also, we have a short interview with Ewan Grufford, and he played Reed Richards in Fantastic Four, and also my favorite role of his was the lead role in Amazing Grace, for you guys who've seen that film. And then also last, but certainly not least, is our interview with Liam McIntyre, who was Spartacus in the Star series. Just a fantastic guy who's really, really nice to us. Even actually signed some autographs for us, which we've never had anyone offer to do that before. So we talked to him about fitness and about his role as Spartacus. And it was all around a great time at Dragon Con. I'm really sad that this is... I kind of like reliving the whole experience through these episodes, and I'm sad that it's kind of ending again. But there's always next year, Dragon Con 2014, where... Unless, come hell or high water, we will be there in 2014. So, man, was it a good year. Man, did we have a good time. But before we jump to the main part of the content, I want to tell you about our sponsor for this episode. Hey, huge shout out to Big Bad Toy Store. They're at BigBadToyStore.com. They're sponsoring this and many other episodes of the Star Wars Report podcast. And I'm not going to go, I could go on and on about how they have everything from G.I. Joe to Star Wars to Kota Bukiya to DC to Transformers to Marvel. I could talk all about that, but I'm not going to. I just want you to know that they have a whole case of the four figures in Wave 2 of the 6-inch Hasbro Black Series. That's the Boba Fett, Han Solo, Greedo, and Slave Leia. And then you can pre-order it for the same price that you would have to hunt them down in the store. That's at Big Bad Toy Store. So here's what I want you guys to do. Go to StarWarsReport.com/toys. StarWarsReport.com/toys. And that'll send you straight over to Big Bad Toy Store. And you can get Wave 2 of the 6-inch Star Wars black figures from Hasbro. Hearing fantastic stuff about it. So thanks once again to Big Bad Toy Store for sponsoring this episode, and don't forget that StarWarsReport.com/toys where you can get it. So do it, folks. Do not hesitate. Show no mercy. All right, and so without further ado, it's episode 105 of the Star Wars Report podcast, interview spectacular from Dragon Con 2013. Hey, see you guys next week.
Oh, man. All right. So we're talking to the one and only Boba Fett himself, Daniel Logan. Thank you for coming on the program.
Very welcome, guys.
And thank you for being so accommodating and coming us back in the quiet out of the Walk of Fame. We're actually, like, this is like a Charlie Rose thing. We're actually seated in chairs where there's, like, actual reporting we're doing for the first time here at Dragon Con. So we're having a lot of fun. But, Daniel, thank you so much for coming on. And, of course, joining me, as always, is my sister, Bethany.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Daniel. Thanks for coming on. So have you had a good convention so far?
You know what? I always have a good time. I'm a little dead tired right now because of lots of travel. I just got back from New Zealand.
Oh, wow.
I was there for 3 weeks. Yeah.
Seems like a bit of jet lag. What's the time difference?
So here is about 9 hours.
Oh,
but,
wow.
A couple days before that, I was then also in Germany for a week. So, I mean, finally, I think it's catching up. I've been a jet setter for most of my life. But,
oh, okay.
Finally, I'm starting to feel the effects of... as I call it, maybe getting old.
No, not at all. Well, you mentioned Germany, so you're at Celebration Europe this past year, as a lot of our listeners know, and they may have actually been and met you there. But describe that experience, because that's the first Star Wars celebration that happened since the Disney announcement, and that was obviously a big topic at the panel this morning. Everyone's talking about Disney, but before we really get into your roles in the films and that, I just want to start by saying, at Star Wars Celebration Europe, you've met fans, you've seen the scene, but how has that changed now that there's a Disney acquisition? Are you seeing a difference at the fan events?
No, you definitely ain't seen no, like, Goofy or Mickey walking around the convention, but... no, it's just the same thing, you know. I think it's more like that corporate franchise, you know. We get bought by another company, but we still play the same way, you know, and nothing changes from coming to conventions, the fans, the way we treat each other, and work together. It's just, you know, a whole nother franchise that has taken on a big role. And you know what? We still...
It's huge. I mean, even at an event like this, it's so exciting to see the fans as excited as they are. And it hasn't been like this since there were films like the prequels. And so when your first role was in Attack of the Clones as the young Boba Fett, do you have a specific memory of first getting that role and being on set?
Yeah, I mean,
Because I know it was a long time ago, but...
Yeah, it was 13 years ago, half my life now. It's unbelievable to think that, you know, at such a young age, I was given that blessing. And to tell you the truth, I was just in awe with the whole experience of just being there, that it was like no other. It was like Christmas Day every single second of every single hour, you know? And I was just blown away. I mean, at 13 years old, you really don't understand how privileged you are as a little boy to be sitting next to these amazing actors and directors, and you know, have the whole concept of you're really part of this all, and you know, this is going to be history in the making, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, had you seen the original Star Wars trilogy before you were in Attack of the Clones? Had you seen The Phantom Menace already?
Well, once I got the audition, I actually went down and sat with my fam or my auntie, and we watched episode one. And I got to see, you know, Jake Lloyd and Ray Park and Liam Neeson and Ewan McGregor and Natalie Portman, and how they all worked together and made this amazing movie or story come to life. And with the whole previous episode of the movie franchise, I'd never seen them. But when I got to set, George actually had the special couch with the TV, with every single episode. So
really?
I had to watch over and over before I actually got to get
on. No, was he... So, like, this was the George couch. Did he sit down actors and say, all right, your homework assignment, if you haven't seen these films, we need to take a look and, you know, set the expectation.
That was the Daniel Logan homework, yeah. No one else needed it.
Oh, really?
Okay. I guess I was the only kid in the universe that had never heard of Star Wars, but...
You probably not, because that is the case. And as the years pass without films, you do see how... generations don't necessarily pick up the films. They pick out things like The Clone Wars, where kids would know you as Boba Fett, as the teenage kid, as the young teenager in The Clone Wars. Talk a little bit about your role in The Clone Wars and how you got it and what that experience was like.
Well, it was amazing because I still don't realize or understand how I did get that role again. I mean, it was just another blessing. I used to beg and grease up to Dave Filoni, but that's really not the case. I ended up finding out that George Lucas actually asked for Boba Fett to come back in The Clone Wars, and he asked for me by name. So, I mean, just in that, in the fact, it's like...
I mean, what's your reaction when you have that moment and you realize that the creator of Star Wars appreciated you and your performance as an actor enough to say, I want him to reprise that role?
Well, it's kind of weird because, you know, it was eight years after I'd even done any filming on or done any work at all. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think it's the fact that I've, you know, stayed positive and stuck with that positivity of Star Wars is a great thing, and it's done great things for many people, changed lives. And, I mean, not only for me and my family, but I know many families have been, you know, affected by this franchise that we call Star Wars. But with the whole Clone Wars thing, you know, with George Lucas... The only way I can explain it is like, you know, an angel that's just given another spot higher into heaven, you know, like by God, you know, himself. So there was no way I would have ever thought George would have ever thought of me again in life. But for the blessing that he'd given me again, I gave my heart and soul to Star Wars, which I'll forever do.
Oh, neat. But what you mentioned about Star Wars has meant so much to so many people and continues to mean a lot to people. I think that has only increased with the announcement of Episode 7. And in your panel today, you and Matthew Wood spoke a bit of Episode 7, a little, as Brian Young had blatantly asked, so what can't you tell us, you know? But you talked about, you know, both Jeremy Bullock and Tamara Morrison both did an amazing job in their roles as Fetts. And But you mentioned that Temuera Morrison maybe looked a little like an older Boba Fett would look. But if you were given the opportunity to play the role, what would you think?
You know, at this point in my life, Star Wars has just been so grateful to me that I can't put into words how grateful me and my family have been. I mean, I've been able to see the world, a kid from New Zealand that, you know, the highest I probably could have gotten is being a rugby player, which I loved. But, I mean, I think one very famous actor said, you know, he'd give a limb just to be a grain of sand in Star Wars. And, I mean, I think if I could put it into words, those are the only words I could say, you know. And with Star Wars, I could go anywhere in the world and say my name, Daniel Logan. But then people kind of turn their shoulder or whatnot, and then someone else in the room will turn and say, well, that kid is Boba Fett, you know. And it's funny, from that Daniel Logan kid just to that transfer of that Boba Fett kid, you know, it's an amazing thing what people do. And you can't put into words the reaction, you know. It's funny, like, oh, Daniel Logan, who's that guy? Boba Fett, oh, nice to meet you, you know. It's like, well, 2 minutes ago I was just Daniel Logan, you know, but I'll be Boba Fett again. So,
well, and what's amazing so often when I see you interact with fans is just how enthusiastic you are. And that's something that, believe it or not, is not all that common, I don't think, on the convention circuit. There are certainly many actors who do. But, I mean, when it comes to when you're talking to that 200th fan, what is it that keeps you so enthusiastic about interacting with the fans?
It's just me. You know, I love being able to see people's enjoyment and happiness. You know, the one thing I always aim for, which sometimes kills it for others, is I try to give people as much time as they need. I mean, people work very hard just to come to these conventions. It costs a lot of money, and then they have to take time off work or figure out, you know, how to get there and how to be able to just enjoy their time while they're here. And, I mean, if I can just make that little time a little more extra special, you know, I've done my good deed in the day. But the reaction on kids' faces is another priceless. I love it, you know. I mean, I look at them like they're the future of not only Star Wars acting, you know, directing. You know, some of these guys might be creative directors, or, you know, you name it. Just from meeting someone here and being able to say, that guy's cool, I want to be like that guy. And I really had nobody like me, but I came from New Zealand, and, you know, I don't see myself higher or bigger than anyone else. I just see myself as a very, very blessed little boy. Well, now grown man still, and, you know, it's cool to be me, to tell you the truth. You know, it's nice to have people walk away and say, that guy is a cool guy, you know, or come up years later with their kid and have the story of when I played with lightsabers with them, or, you know, it just makes it all worth it. You know, you don't realize the enjoyment you get back when people come and tell you how cool you were to their child, or, you know.
Oh, yes. Yes. I don't know how many kids I have heard, when they talk about Star Wars, they talk about Boba Fett. Not just in the movies either. I've heard them, if they talk about the Clone Wars, most little boys that I've heard talk about the Clone Wars start talking about how cool Boba Fett was. So I've definitely seen that myself. You mentioned you'd played rugby. I was curious if you still play, or if you play other sports like that sometimes.
I play slow men's softball now. I'm an old guy. No, what happened was they basically gave me two options. You could either act or you could play rugby. So being the type of person...
How tough was that choice?
Very, very, very tough. But it came to a point where I had to make a choice not only for me, but my future and my family. So I looked at acting like even more profitable and would be able to help my family at the time. And I tried to play rugby in between acting, but what happened was I ended up in between the slow time of Star Wars. They let me go for like 6 months while they filmed all the rest of the Tunisia and stuff like that scenes. And I played rugby, and I got my arm broken at school.
Ah.
Some big guy snapped my arm. So luckily enough, my arm was just coming out of cast when they called me back to do more shots and scenes.
Good.
So.
Well, I mean, the fact that Boba Fett plays rugby, I think, actually is pretty cool in and of itself. But as far as... Here's an interesting kind of side question. So if Boba Fett were to play rugby against another fan favorite in the Clone Wars, Cad Bane, who do you think would win? Here's a good question.
Well, that's a hard one. You never know what's going on underneath Boba's bucket, but then again, that Cad Bane
I have a feeling that he would be pretty good at rugby.
Yeah, you know, he'd be able to blast a thing or two, I guess, but Cad Bane, he's always a tough competitor.
This is true. That's a tough one.
So if you could have been any other character in the Clone Wars, what character would you have chosen to be?
Well, I kind of see myself more like Yoda, because people don't understand what I'm talking. You know, I talk backwards sometimes, just New Zealand talk, you know. Funny that is, you know, I'm just like, and just smile and nod. I'm shorter and, you know, I try to see the lighter side of the Force most times. But if I could be any character, I really love Darth Maul. I'm a martial artist and I have a lot of respect and Ray Park's work. I'd love to.
Now I've seen you guys out on the convention circuit together. Have you guys like worked out together or stuff like that?
Yeah, we used to work out about 5 times a week.
Oh my goodness.
Years, wow. But he started working and then I got now a couple companies and businesses I run, so life just came ahead, but sure. I still stretch. But we used to train every day almost. I used to babysit his kids after training and
really? So, yeah. I mean, and you guys weren't even in the same film together, but there does seem to be a very tight-knit group of the Star Wars actors, especially ones that have been on the convention circuit. Why do you think that is? Because I seem to notice that seems to be even more the case than other franchises. I see you guys hanging out together, having fun, after parties, stuff like that. It's not just, well, we're going to meet up for the panel.
Well, with me, you can't not like me, you know? I make it to where you kind of have to be my friend, but I'm the type of person that I like to hang out with everybody, so.
Good, good. Excellent. Well, I'll tell you what. We've taken enough of your time. Daniel, thank you so much for coming on the program, and enjoy yourself at Dragon Con this year. Thank you so much.
You guys, too. Have a wonderful Dragon Con, and hopefully I'll see you next year. Yo, what's up, guys? This is the one and only Daniel Logan, the young bounty hunter on the dark side of the galaxy. You are listening to the one and only Star Wars Report. Stay tuned for more good question and answers. If not, the bounty will be on your head. Have a wonderful day and may the Dark Force be with you always. Keep listening, more good stuff to come.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to a very patient and kind man. That's Johan
Griffith, yes.
Excellent,
yes,
I just want to make sure I had that
pleasure.
Right. How are you enjoying Dragon Con?
I got to be honest with you, I'm a bit sort of flabbergasted, really, and overwhelmed.
Is this your first time here?
First time at Dragon Con, not the first time in Atlanta, but first time at Dragon Con, and I didn't know what to expect. I'd been warned that it was going to be pretty hectic and wild, but it sort of exceeded my imagination, actually.
Sure.
Oh, yes. I mean, so many people here. I mean, you can hear them all in the distance, but 55,000 people is what we've been told.
Is that how many? Wow. Yes. It felt that way last night. I took a journey from my hotel across the Skywalk into this building that we're in, and I didn't quite appreciate what I was going to see, and I had to get my camera out and take a movie because I just saw almost a full size version of the Marshmallow Man, which was pretty wild, you know, just walking around. It was pretty intense.
Well, I've definitely been a fan of some of your works. I really enjoyed Fantastic Four, but my favorite movie that you're in is Amazing Grace. I really enjoyed that movie. When you played the role of William Wilberforce, how did you approach playing a role like that? Sort of a man of honor, a man of character.
Well, it's I'm a very sort of instinctive actor. When I read the script, I was moved by the fact that I never really known anything about this man. You know, I was learning about this man whilst reading the script. Uh-huh. And when I eventually got the part, of course, I studied a lot about him. And it's quite a humbling experience when you play somebody that actually existed, who dedicated their entire life to this unbelievable cause and who succeeded. And when you play somebody who is going up against the system, they immediately become the hero and also hated for what he's trying to do. And it's kind of a lesson that I've taken away from that making that movie, that it is it is hard to get where you want to get, and you have to make tough decisions along the way, and you're going to be misunderstood, and people are going to hate you for your decisions or misunderstand you, and but you need to burst forth from your sort of safety net and your sort of bubble, your little comfort zone, and burst forth and, you know, go and get where you want to get.
Yeah. Now, in that movie, you actually sang the song Amazing Grace. And
yes.
I understand that you sang when you were younger, too. Is that something you've done for a long time? Or?
Yeah, singing was a big part of our heritage in Wales. We grew up singing in schools. I sang as a soloist in choirs. At Sunday school and chapel, you know, we sang. It's a big tradition in Wales of singing, you know, through religion and singing just for the pleasure of it. You know, we're a very musical, lyrical country.
Neat. Well, I'm very curious. How did you get the role of Reed Richards in Fantastic Four?
I auditioned. I got to, a script to read, read the script, thought I'd be bright for the part, and went and auditioned for the part, and I auditioned about three or four times, and then I screen tested, and then I tested again with a few different Sue Storms, and then eventually got the part. So it was a long, drawn-out process over many, many weeks, and
Wow.
I couldn't quite believe it when it happened, you know.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, I noticed your line's coming up, and you've been very generous with your time, but I do have one final question to close this out. When you're approaching a character like Reed Richards or William Wilberforce, what are some of the similarities between a kind of modern Hollywood hero like Reed Richards and really a hero of older times like William Wilberforce?
Well, I guess you can't really compare the two, because one is pure imagination and fantasy, and one is a real character that existed and walked this earth. So you can't really compare the two as far as, you know, their effect on the world that we live in. But, you know, the fantasy world and the world of imagination has inspired people to do great things as well. You know, it's inspired people to be confident and to fight against evil, I suppose, and to look up, have an image to look up to, that we can have the confidence and the courage to do things that are harder than, you know, than things that are hard, that we find hard to, so hard to do that you almost are terrified by it.
Sure.
So it's a way of having the confidence to live with that terror, because you know what you're doing is right.
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you one thing they do have in common for me as a huge fan of your work is that they're both really inspiring, and you've really inspired myself and a lot of others. So thank you so much for being part of this interview, and thank you so much for coming out to Atlanta.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me. Cheers.
Thank you.
Remember, God made men equal.
Hi, I'm Johan Griffith, and you're listening to the Star Wars Report on Middle Earth Network.
Blind, but now I see.
Didn't I write that?
Yes, you did.
Now at last it's true.
Amazing Grace.
Quick sound check. Is
that, look at
sound,
that.
Does that sound all right?
That's a sound check from Spartacus
three,
himself.
Eight.
Look at that. And Bethany, we'll make sure yours are coming through.
Checking the sound.
Perfect.
Testing,
all right, testing. We're ready to roll.
I can hear you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Middle Earth Network's continuing coverage of DragonCon 2013. And we're joined by a really talented gentleman who I have enormous respect for as a human being, an actor.
And also Liam McIntyre.
And also he's Liam McIntyre.
Yeah,
hey, thanks
guy.
For coming on, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. This is cool.
Yeah, and Liam, we really appreciate you taking a few minutes. You have been busy.
Yeah, well, it's that kind of convention, right?
Yes, it is.
DragonCon seems like a pretty big deal.
Now, this is your first year here?
It's my very first year here.
We're people call us new, and we've been here, what, this is our third year?
Yeah,
I'm a full-on rook then.
But have you enjoyed it so far?
It's been amazing. I got to take an elevator down with an 8-foot Darth Vader, and I finally was like, that's why the dark side is so scary. I get it now.
Trapped in an elevator with an 8-foot.
It was like, he's menacing. I was like, that's not
just
a plastic helmet.
No.
Yeah, it was quite hot, so yeah, he was kind of breathing heavy.
Exactly, as sometimes he does. But so how much have you been on the floor as much?
Nowhere near as much. I've got so many board games to buy and no time to buy them in, but that's okay. Yeah, like, that's okay.
Well, I mean, because you'd be mobbed.
I don't know. I mean, it's you know, everyone's lovely here, though. Like, no one's like disrespectful or anything like that. Everyone is just, and everyone loves their fan base, sure. You know, and their fandom, so they're really committed to that. So no one gives you a hard time. It's really
good.
Great.
Well, I mean, have you run into many Spartacus fans?
I've seen some people that have like legitimate costumes. One of which I think I was actually wearing at one stage. not this time around. But you know, I was like, oh, I remember that smell. How creepy!
Exactly. Oh,
well, I think Riley meant mobbed more in the sense, the positive sense, if you can use that
mobbed
word positively.
In the best of ways.
Yeah.
Well, but having fans who are just so excited to see you, happy to have you here for the first time.
Yeah, well, we've got great fans. Spartacus has always had really passionate and dedicated fans, and we can't thank them enough, because it's great. It's like, you know, there's no feeling quite like it.
Sure. And we were at the panel the other day, and we really thoroughly enjoyed it. It was fun to see you guys up on stage, kind of going at it.
They're the best. Like, I got to do that panel with the incredible Lucy Lawless and Manu Bennett, who's also incredible. But we always have fun at those things. Panels, I don't know, panels are just such fun. You can just sort of do whatever you want. It's great. You know, just be yourself, right?
And the fans, that's what's so great, is the fans usually just want to hear what you have to say. And it's always great to hear the perspective on the actor side of things, because...
But that's the great thing for us, is we want to hear what the fans have to say. It's the only chance we really get to sort of go, all right, so you guys watch this, what's your side of things? You know, because we're stuck in New Zealand and we don't get to hear it. So, you know, is it going well? Are you, what, any questions, anything you don't know?
I guess it is. It's more of a touchstone instead of looking at, I guess, ratings or Nielsen ratings. It's a much more way to get a really pulse.
Yeah, because that's not something that actors really worry about. Sure. Actors are more like, am I doing my job in a way that, you know, because without fans you don't have a show, and you really should stop doing what you're doing. You know,
yeah, exactly. I mean, like,
it's not working out. But so it's been
good.
So
then, have you had any questions that have surprised you?
Oh, someone had a really great question about how do you, I guess it's a tough thing for an actor to answer, but it was like, so how does the chemistry work? How does an actor's chemistry work?
Sure.
How do you have good chemistry? And like, if we knew that, we'd start making films and making money.
We saw it on stage, so it's there.
That's
sure.
what I mean, though. Like, but there's also, I mean, Lucy made a good point in that, and she said she was best friends with some of her co-stars, you know, and they're like, you know, they're great mates, but, you know, and then they have to do a love scene or something like that, you know, but then you're sort of finishing like, I love you, but I have nothing, like, you know, I have absolutely no romantic inclinations towards you at all. So on-screen chemistry is something that's a little bit foreign to other kinds of chemistry, you know, or just like sort of off-screen chemistry, as it were. So it's a crazy thing, you know. Anyway, a lot of questions like that were just really interesting.
Yeah. So what got you into the role of Spartacus to begin with? Like, when Andy was amazing in that role. He's a great actor.
Yeah.
And it was really sad to see him pass away.
Absolutely.
But how did you hear of the role? How did you come to take on that role?
How did you find yourself upon the sands?
I know, right? I didn't get to be on the sands as much as I thought. But I'd just done a role where I'd lost like 40 something pounds, so I was like machinist thin.
Oh boy.
Which was gross, and don't do
so
that
you can
at home.
Identify with the old Christian Bale.
Not as
bit,
I mean, he was a crazy level. He was like a level above. He like, it wasn't like a coffee a day kind of thing. But I was pretty damn skinny, and it wasn't looking very good. And then they were like, "Oh, we want you to audition for this show, Spartacus." So I was like, "Oh, great! My best friend made me watch that show, and it's amazing." What's the role? And I said, "For Spartacus." And I went, "Well, that's not right, because they've got one, and he's amazing." And that's when I sort of found out that Andy had got sick, and that was surprisingly sad. I guess it's something I didn't have to think about too much at the time, because I was so sure I was never going to get the role, because I was like, I don't look like the guy, I haven't done a lot of credits, so, you know, I'm not going to be cast in this, but it would be fun, you know, like I'll audition for it and maybe get some feedback or something.
And you guys shot in Australia, correct?
We shot in New Zealand, actually.
Zealand?
Yeah, so I'm from Australia.
Our
traditional colonial rivals, being New Zealand, was one of those places that Australians go, New Zealand, I'm not going there.
So you found yourself in New Zealand for the audition.
Well, no, I auditioned in Australia a couple of times, and at the first one I was like, wow, I mean,
like what was the point where you realized this might be happening?
Oh, not for a long time after that. I got a couple of auditions in Australia where I was like, well, I mean, this is going well. I'm getting through this. This is like, when they're eventually going to work out that it's not me, but this is fun so far. They even took me to New Zealand, and I was still like, well, I mean, wow, free trip to New Zealand. This is working out. And they trained me for literally 4 months, which was insane. And still like, maybe, you know, it might be you. I was like, oh, God. At the end of that 4 months, I'm like, I still don't expect to get this, but like, someone put me out of my misery sort of thing. So I'd say no already. And then they said yes. And it was only when they said yes in like late January that I went, oh, wait, hang on. So I now have to do this. I have to actually carry on this legacy of this incredible actor. And that's when it got a little bit, like, intimidating. So, because honestly, up until then, I really didn't think it was ever going to be real.
Does that lend you some... Do you think that sometimes as an actor, when you're auditioning, having some level of confidence that you're not going to get the role actually helps you...
Amazingly. Surprisingly, yeah. Like, because you can really get yourself in a headspace where you almost try too hard because you want it so badly.
Sure.
You know, and that, you know, it's understandable because...
It's like us asking for interviews here, actually.
I can imagine. No, it's a crazy experience, but... yeah, in a weird way, being so sure of going, well, you know, because everything was just a little experience. You know, it was just like a one step towards another great experience. And wow, I must be getting better at this acting thing because people care. You know, that people never really cared before, and it made it easier because it was just me trying to see, you know, if I'm doing a good job. But I never really thought that, and it did make it a lot easier that I didn't really think I would get it.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I do want to... When it comes to that particular role, you touched on something a moment ago, which is the physicality of it and the 4 months of training.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to probably jump to a territory which I hope you're not sick of anybody covering,
go
but that's
it.
All the physical training. It's astounding.
Oh, no, it's, yeah,
I remember watching the behind-the-scenes that you guys would be posting on YouTube for each season and seeing the Spartacus
working,
boot camp.
Yeah, boot camps, yeah, that's...
What's the process... of getting into something like that? Because you're an actor, you're used to probably getting into physical roles, I imagine, but it seems like a whole new level.
No, but that, for me, that was just entirely, like I said, you know, it's not like I had a lot of professional credits or anything. People weren't paying me money to get in any kind of shape or anything like that. You know, it was like, you know, it's almost like cheating. When you start succeeding as an actor, you get more opportunities. Like, you know, these guys were making me get in shape, you know, whereas before then, you just got to do it yourself. But, you know, I'm just a dorky nerd at heart and no joke, so I used to just play video games and you know, and that sort of thing, and so I wasn't really a gym nut or anything like that, so this is all kind of new to me really, so that was for the hardest months in the world.
Sure
You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's something in front of that.
And so it's like, it's just my body's still like, what are you doing? Like, this isn't what we do. But yeah, it's just, you just start, and I mean, I had a pretty good incentive. Do you want probably the greatest role ever or not? You know, the answer was yes. So you just kind of knuckle down and see what you're made of. It isn't easy. It really isn't
what,
easy.
And if you don't mind, what is the average day in a boot camp like?
Get there at 8 in the morning. If you get there late, you get a 40-pound vest to wear for the rest of the training.
Hooray.
As if it isn't hard enough. So nobody was late, so they end up just going, Liam, you can wear it. Well, but I'm here, you can wear it. You're the lead. I'm like, oh, yay. Oh, lucky me. It was grueling. But, you know, so there was that. And so you start that, you do warm-ups, which weren't warm-ups. They were like things like the circle of death. That sounds fun. And flipping tires from one end of the gym to the other and then doing chin-ups and then flipping them back again and then doing sprints and then warm-up.
Wow.
Then stretching, then... You know, like 2 hours of skills training, rolls, stunt training, punching, sword fighting, all that business. And then another hour to 2 hours of circuit training, which is just horrible.
So what was your least favorite set of exercises?
Dirty 30s.
And all of that?
The Dirty 30s. So named because, okay, the way it works is there's three separate exercises, groups of exercises you do for 10 minutes each. So the way it works is, say you do sleds, which is like you strap yourself to a weighted sled, which already sounds horrible, and then you have to run to one end of the gym, dragging it over a certain point, the sled over a line, doing 10 push-ups, and then dragging it back to the other side of the gym again. Within a minute, any time you've got, like if you get there 40 seconds, you get 20 seconds off.
Okay.
And then you start again in the next minute. But obviously, as you go through, then after 10 of those, then you go to the next exercise for 10, and the next exercise for 10. So, but as you get tighter, suddenly you're doing it in 50 seconds, and then 55 seconds, and so your rest is going from 20 to 10 seconds to 5 seconds. And it just, like, it seems reverse intuitive, that the tighter you get, the harder it is, and the more you have to do it. It's just, it's horrible. And you just kind of want to throw up at the end.
Hey.
That but the results work.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, the good news is it's not for nothing, because that would be kind of disappointing. But no, they really work. But stuff like that, you're just going, I don't know about this.
Well, this makes me curious. So now that the series is wrapped up, have you taken any of those lessons with you? Do you work out more than you used to? Or?
Yeah, oh, totally. Yeah, I mean, it's another one of those things. It takes so long to do it that you sort of go, well, I'm invested now. It'd be a shame to kind of let it go.
Sure.
But and it's hard once you've started getting fit. It's hard to think any other way, because your body is actually going, this is pretty great. Mm-hmm. You know, having been a pretty chubby kid, my body's like, this is what I'm talking about. This is what I've been trying to tell you this whole time. You know, you had asthma and now you don't. So, you know, if you had just listened and eaten better food and trained more, you would have been healthier much longer than this. Mm-hmm. But, so it's...
Well, I think that's one thing that's really cool about the show is that the first season aired, around 2010 or so?
Yeah.
And at that time, I was at late high school, mm-hmm. and I would have been... 50 pounds heavier than I am today.
Really?
And it's a long process of manufacturing, but one of them is like, look at those guys. They can do it. That's an ideal to strive towards. I'm not sure if you
crazy?
Guys... Have you guys run it? Have you run into that where kids say...
Lots, actually,
we
want to
be like that.
Yeah, it's surprising. Amano was talking about it, and it's only then that I was starting to think about it, that, yeah, there's a lot of people that go, I could train more and be fitter and feel better. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, it's because they watch Spartacus. And that's a cool feeling, because, you know, as an actor,
it's really great.
It's really nice to know that you don't just, you know, get up and sort of dance about on a screen, but people actually take something away and it means something to some people. It's like, you know, you have this big audience, and to actually affect some positive change is a really cool feeling as an actor.
Well, absolutely. And I think that's one thing that themes in science fiction and fantasy and series like Spartacus that have such a great impact, and that's why 50,000 people show up here in Atlanta every year.
That's incredible,
Ryan. And that's why we really appreciate you coming out. And I do want to ask a couple final questions. So moving forward in your career, you have Hercules 3D coming,
right?
Yeah,
Hercules is coming out, which is super exciting.
Now, are you guys started filming, done filming? What's the process?
No, we're done. We're done filming now, which is...
Already done?
Yeah, right. Wow. It's 3 months in sunny Bulgaria. Interesting place. Yeah, that was cool. It was nice, too, because Spartacus finished, and I was like, I kind of like swinging swords around. So, you know, even probably not the biggest stretch of my acting talent, but it's in terms of, like, you know, a whole, it's still more swords. But it was cool being able to do a similar sort of world and be able to find a whole new character, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Because I really do love that, you know, obviously one was Roman history, the other's Greek history, but, well, Greek mythology. But, living in the Greek world, it's different enough, and my character is so much fun to play. So
now, who do you play? I've got to
play Satyrus, which is like Hercules' best friend.
Really?
Which was exciting for me, because I got to ring up Michael Hurst, who directs a lot of the Spartacus episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
Who played Aeolus, Hercules' best friend in Hercules' The Legendary Journeys.
Really?
Directed by Rob Tappert, nice. Produced by Rob Tappert, who produced Spartacus, and be like, hey, I'm essentially playing you in another Hercules. Thanks, boss. Any tips? That was fun. So, small world in some ways.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I will speak for as a huge Spartacus fan, I really, really loved your performance throughout
definitely.
The season. And the final season... I cried like a very I cried like a girl.
We got
another
one.
This one does not cry
worse
that
than a girl.
Often.
Really?
It was terrible, but
related
it was great.
To that, how did you feel playing a character that you knew would die, basically?
Yeah.
Well, they kept throwing
the Titanic will sink. Yeah.
I know, but that's the thing. Good old history being what it is. They didn't know that much about Spartacus, really. Historically, and all they knew is that his body wasn't found on the battlefield. So that,
which,
you know,
fair enough. I mean, the series does kind of end with a little bit of a
window
for
sort
imagination.
Of go a bit both ways in a way, but it's essentially historically as accurate as it needs to be. And
sure.
But they could have gone, like, you know, within history's bounds, they could have gone the other way, and he could have survived. I don't think it would have been the hero's journey.
Sure.
That it could have been if that had happened. So I'm kind of glad that it ended with some finality. But I was. It's exciting, like to know that you're going to have some. I mean, as most characters in this show do, some sort of epic death.
Yeah.
Know? So, I was probably the only character in the whole show that was like, I'm probably going to make it to the last episode. You know, let's be fair. Yeah. Everyone else is like, God, will I have a job tomorrow? Not sure.
Sure. Wow. Well, well said, sir. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes of your time here at Dragon Con. And we hope you really enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Yeah, it's going great.
And thanks for being part of it.
Thanks for having me. This is Liam McIntyre. I played Spartacus, and you're listening to the Star Wars Report on Middle Earth Network.